the house ready? Okay. I will open the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee for Natural Resources for June 10th, 2015. There are a couple of changes in the agenda. My understanding is that we're going to pull 3463 for further consideration at a later date. I will not go to the work session yet on Department of Geology and Mineral Industries because, as you can obviously see, I do not have a quorum on the House side. Given the nature of all of the bills that are up for public hearing, that they all relate, at least broadly, to a particular subject, I'm actually going to open a public hearing on all of the bills simultaneously. So I'll be opening a public hearing on HB 2653, HB 3360, HB 3361, and HB 3362.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, I'll just briefly introduce each of those. House Bill 2653 requires Oregon State University Extension Service in consultation with the State Department of Agriculture and beekeeping organizations to establish best practices for beekeeping within residential areas. We do have this came to you from the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. We do have a fiscal impact statement issued for this one. The fiscal for Oregon State University Extension System estimate is approximately $300,000 to provide support for the program, develop the best practices, and provide coordination. The Department of Agriculture estimates a minimal fiscal impact. House Bill 3360 includes a blank general fund appropriation. This appropriates money from the general fund to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission for Oregon State University for Bee Health Diagnostic Facility at Honey Bee Lab. House Bill 3361 also appropriates monies from the general fund to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission for Oregon State University Extension Service activities relating to pollinator health. And then the last one, House Bill 3362, establishes a pesticide use safety plan, increases apiary registration fees. This one also has a fiscal impact statement issued. The fee for each registration would be $10. The Oregon Department of Agriculture anticipates one-time development costs for the reporting system required of the measure to be about $25,000 to $50,000 general fund, depending upon the project scope. ODA also anticipates an additional $10,000 general fund and $75,000 other funds for rulemaking, education, and associated requirements. ODA estimates $282,400 other funds revenue from the product pesticide product registration and apiary and colony registration fees. Oregon State University estimates a fiscal impact of $250,000 per biennium for developing educational and outreach activities for both pollinator health and pesticide use and continued outreach.
Yeah. Okay, we've opened all those public hearings. I actually have on the various bills three parties testified to testify in favor, one party who indicates they are neutral, so I'll take the three parties in favor first. Ralph Rodia, Rain Lee Ritalto, and Scott Dahlman. And in addition to identifying yourself, if you could identify if you're speaking to one of the four bills, please identify that also. Are you coming back?
Yeah.
Please begin.
I'm Ralph Rodia. I represent the Oregon State Beekeepers Association. And I'm here specifically to talk about House Bill 2653, although I am well aware of the other bills as well, but I was not a primary person involved in the other bills. 2653, I've got some handouts, and I understand you're interested mainly in the fiscal impact, but what I'm handing you now is information relating to why we want the bill in the first place, because as I had attachment there, last night we were at the city of Hubbard, and the city of Hubbard bans bees as exotic animals, dangerous and wild animals. And this is just one example how some cities around the state have really highly restrictive rules with respect to beekeeping, which are really unwarranted. And the bill that 2653 will do is provide a level field so both beekeepers and the cities will have some understanding what is or is not allowed at various throughout the state, so you don't have this inconsistencies where we fight, that's a hard word, where we disagree with cities from time to time as beekeepers raise the issue of whether or not it's legal for them to have bees. And in many cases it is. In Portland you can have 15 beehives on a residential lot. In Gresham you can have 6. In Hubbard you can have 0. In Salem you can have 5. In Kaiser you can have whatever you want. It's a big hodgepodge of rules that exist, and 2653 addresses that. Now to the fiscal impact. We did not expect any fiscal impact, and we were surprised when the Department of Ag came up with the $300,000. And in fact, we thought that had been withdrawn on the basis that the 2653 is sort of folded in with the other bills. As they're developing information from the other bills, they'll also be developing stuff for 2653. And so we're a bit surprised about the separate fiscal impact. Now, Rainey's going to talk to an alternative. If there is a fiscal impact, there is a way of minimizing that impact. Rainey?
Okay. Hi, I'm Rainey Ritalto, and I'm actually the requester for the bill. It came out of my fight with Gresham for 4 years to try to get beekeeping legalized. And in envisioning this bill, one of the things that was a goal of mine was that that all of the education piece and outreach come through the OSU Master Beekeeper Program. So I don't know in what has been crafted and, you know, where this $300,000 price tag came from. But my vision was that the Master Beekeeper Program, specifically the Journey Level students, would help craft these best practices documentation so that, it's a great learning tool for them. It positions them well to be in a responsive role and sort of liaison role with the cities. But it also helps minimize the costs. And I have actually talked to Carolyn Brees, who is the program administrator for that, and she is definitely in favor of that, and said she will talk to Ramesh Sagili, who's the professor, about that. She feels like that will be a supported item for them. I really am stymied where the $300 price tag is coming from, because this beekeeping isn't new. That it should be a very simple matter to pull together best practices documentation from existing sources, either locally through OSU or on the internet. And I don't see that that would get into that level of cost. Okay. So,
any questions for? Seeing none. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please proceed, and at the same time, will Representative Reardon come up with you? And Representative Reardon, if you want to start off, we were hoping that you might be here first, but we had to get started. So.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you for having me this morning. For the record, I am Representative Reardon.
And Representative Reardon, for the record, I did open public hearings on all four of the bills. So.
Okay. Thank you. So anyway, I'm very happy to be here this morning. Just kind of a quick review of some of the history of, you know, how we got where we are. I first became aware of bee issues in 2012, I believe, and they had a huge bee kill-off in Wilsonville, and became concerned about that. I introduced one bill that would have banned neonics, and that didn't go very far. We ended up having a governor's task force, and I'm very happy that it worked out that way. We ended up with a group that included some representatives from industry, including Mr. Dolman here, and some bee advocates and people from Xerces Society and so forth, and we had some really great conversations. And out of that very collaborative process, we did come up with these particular bills that we're talking about this morning. So just a little tiny bit of background, and then I'll get into the prepared remarks. One of the things that I learned that was really kind of drove my thinking on how to proceed with this was that the bee kill-offs, when they did occur, were done by folks that were licensed beekeepers. So they had bought their books, they'd gone to school, they'd passed the test, and they still had issues. And other folks that might be dealing with pesticide problems include folks like you and me that haven't had all of this instruction. So if we see pests of some kind, we want to deal with them. My first instinct might have been, in the past, to go down into Lowe's or Home Depot or whatever my favorite store is, grab a jug of whatever, and start applying that. And the only information that I might have would be whatever's on that label. And so from this, what I've realized is I think we really need to do a lot better job of educating people about how to approach pesticide issues. If you're an avid home gardener, as my wife and I are, where do you get information about that? And so first of all, awareness that there is a problem, and then better information. The other part of it, through my meetings with Ramesh Sagili, Dr. Sagili from OSU, realized we have a fantastic resource at Oregon State. Dr. Sagili started this about 2006, kind of by hook and crook, and has been slowly building up this research facility. And so what I'm proposing here would be a modest addition to that work. But we've got a lot of research. It isn't just neonicotinoids that cause bee issues. It's habitat. It's half a dozen other things that contribute to the problem. So I'd really like to educate people and help with the research. And then if we do have problems, if there is a die-off, we need a way to diagnose those problems. And that's there are very few of those facilities. I know there's one at WSU that does some diagnostic work, but they're not very widespread across the country. So kind of like the forensics lab, we kind of need that once in a while. So anyway, back into my prepared notes, House Bill 4139 established a task force. This was in 2014 on pollinator health. And four bills are based on those recommendations by the task force. One is Oregon would develop a strong, effective outreach and education strategy. Oregon should fully fund a state-of-the-art bee health diagnostic facility at Oregon State. And third point, an integrated pollinator health research plan should be developed and funded to improve understanding of the many issues affecting pollinator health, and a sustainable revenue stream to fund the proposed outreach, education, and research programs as needed. House Bill 3360 establishes a diagnostic facility at Oregon State University Honeybee Lab by appropriating $1.25 million from the general fund. $500,000 is a one-time fee to equip the facility, and the $750,000 is every two-year amount for staffing. House Bill 3361 appropriates $500,000 to the Extension Service to disseminate educational materials on pollinator health. I mentioned the need for outreach and then developing some of the materials. There might be an app for that. So, House Bill 3362 establishes a reporting system for pollinator die-offs, increases pesticide registration fees and apiary registration fees. So that's a little help from our friends to pay for all of this, and also direct Oregon State University to create educational materials on pollinator health. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. Or
okay. Any questions for Representative Reardon? Seeing none. Well, thank you very much for
being
here today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And now if you would.
Thank you, Co-Chair Devlin. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Dahlman. I'm the Policy Director for Oregonians for Food and Shelter. Speaking today in favor of House Bill 3360, 3361, and 3362, we don't have any position on 2653. As a reminder, OFS is a grassroots coalition made up of farmers, foresters, and other pesticide users. And we are all concerned about bee health. Both farmers and beekeepers have a lot of skin in the game on this issue because Oregon farmers depend on bees to pollinate their crops, but also depend on pesticide tools to control destructive pests. Similarly, commercial beekeepers rely on healthy crops to utilize their pollination services. This means that Oregon growers and beekeepers have a lot at stake in this conversation and each share a vested interest in ensuring that the use of pesticide products and the health of bees are not mutually exclusive, and we continue to believe that that is the case. So as you remember, and as Representative Reardon just spoke about, Oregon took a proactive step last year on pollinator health with House Bill 4139. Which initially would have restricted the use of neonicotinoid insecticides. There's been a lot of attention to that particular class of insecticides and their potential effect on bees. After some conversations last year, it was determined that the best way to move forward would be to establish a task force to really look at the broader issue of pollinator health. And not just one singular factor. The committee was established. It was a 10-member committee. I'm feeling a little lonely up here today, but there were 10 of us in the room, a diverse group of stakeholders that met 7 times over last summer and really delved into the issue and took a deep dive. What quickly rose to the top was that bee health has no simple answer. There's not one factor that we can eliminate, one change we can make that will completely improve bee health. Things ranging from mites, diseases, pesticides, genetic diversity, nutrition, habitat are all contributing factors. And so there really needs to be a holistic approach moving forward. And we feel that the recommendations coming forward really take that holistic approach. Representative Reardon talked to you about the priority recommendations that came out of that, but they are contained in 3360, 3361, and 3362. I would like to point out that in 3362, we stepped forward as industry and volunteered to use some registration fee dollars going forward, which will require an increase in the pesticide registration fee to fund outreach and education efforts to all pesticide users, so both licensed commercial users as well as homeowners as well, and really getting out to them with the information, because we continue to believe that if these products are used appropriately according to the label, that they do not pose an unreasonable risk to bees or other pollinators. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have one party left that has signed up to testify. Mr. Arp.
Good morning, Co-Chair Devlin, members of the committee. My name is Dan Arp. I'm Dean of the College of Ag Sciences at Oregon State University and also serve in the role as Director of the Oregon Agricultural Experiment Station. And I really just wanted to chat with you this morning a little bit about the connection between these bills and the enhancement package for the statewides at Oregon State University and the pieces that are in that package that would help with respect to these bills. So as you're well aware, we have been working for some time on an enhancement package that originally started out at $16 million. As we were developing that package, one of the very important things in that was pollinator health. So we were looking at pieces that were important to the state, and we had pollinator health in there from the very beginning. And we've been developing this package for well over a year now. As the task force completed its work, we were quick to pick up their recommendations and include those in our more refined package. So within that package, we have two FTE to staff the diagnostic lab that was recommended by the task force. We also have one extension faculty position, one FTE there, that would do much of the outreach, education, the looking at the educational materials, best practices, that sort of work. So that's all included in there as well. As I think many of you are aware, we're now looking at the possibility of a $14 million package that would be funded through Gainshare. So I just want to indicate that within that $14 million, these three FTE remain a top priority and would be funded. In addition, we would come up with the funding within that $14 million package to provide the setup costs for that diagnostic lab as well. So those are the pieces that we have there. Also wanted to just briefly comment on the fiscal impact statement that we submitted for 2653, based on what I heard from the testimony of the earlier testimony this morning. That didn't come from Oregon Department of Agriculture. That actually came from Oregon State University, and specifically came from me. What happened there was that we get these requests for a fiscal analysis, and we try and interpret from what we're reading in a paragraph or two in a bill as to what the actual cost would be. I certainly agree that in developing the best practices, that's not a $300,000 need. We were hung up on the word disseminate and how much it would take to actually then get that information out and who would be doing that, and one FTE seemed actually quite reasonable to be continuing to do that over the next couple of years. But I certainly agree that to develop the best practices shouldn't take the full $300,000. I would also say that the FTE that we would have through this the $14 million package should be capable of doing that work. And so with that, just to emphasize again that within the $14 million package, we have two FTE that would staff the diagnostic lab and one extension FTE that could work on best practices and outreach and engagement to the public. And with that, be happy to answer any questions.
Question?
Yes.
Dr. Harper, I appreciate that very much, but I just want to make sure that I think I understood what you said, but the package, you know, the bill's right here that I'm hearing you say that if the gain share comes through, you would have the resources to fund these packages.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Just for the clarification of the record, just so that people understand, the bill that will modify gain share actually is sitting in Ways and Means and will probably begin to move sometime next week. The bill does not actually, from that change, directly fund this program, but it frees up general funds that have ultimately been agreed to that will go to expanding the statewide. So I just want to clarify, because that's the underlying agreement.
Good clarification.
So,
yeah.
Any additional discussion? Is there anyone in the audience who did not sign up who wishes to testify on this? Yes, please come forward. And I'm going to ask you to keep your testimony to 2 to 3 minutes because I now have a quorum and I actually have a budget to move. So, and if you'll come forward also and identify yourself for the record.
Kosher Devlin, members of the committee, Elizabeth Remley here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Nurseries. The executive director, Jeff Stone of the Association of Nurseries, also sat on the bee task force over the interim, and I just wanted to quickly register our support for House Bills 3360, 3361, and 3362. You have a letter of support from the OAN that I will allow you to peruse on your own time, and that's all I have to say today. Thank you.
For the record, Adam Meyer with the Oregon Conservation Network. I'll be brief as well. I just wanted to quickly register our support for House Bill 3360, 3361, 3362. It does great research, best practices, and public education, which we're all very excited about. And we're very concerned about the health of bees and sort of on agriculture and the greater ecosystem. So we're very much in support of that. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much. We will stand at recess for about 60 seconds.
Well, the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, can we hear the LFO recommendation?
Chair,
open a work session. Yeah.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, you should have the LFO recommendation packet on OLIS. It should look very familiar to you at this point. The first couple of pages are the LFO memo outlining the recommendations, and then you have the LFO work session papers, which I'll go through to highlight each package. Then you have the KPM reports, the amendment, and then the amendment should be the final copy you have there. So included in the LFO recommendation for the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries 15-17 budget, I'll just briefly go through the budget points on the memo. The first order of business here is there is an increase of $800,000 of general fund to the 2013-15 legislatively approved budget in order to support current operations and backfill a shortfall in revenue. The agency has a shortfall in other funds and federal funds revenue. The extent of that shortfall wasn't revealed until late in the biennium. This will be used for both personal services and S&S costs. Part of the issue is a major turnover with the leadership of the organization, from the director to assistant directors, and their chief fiscal officer have all turned over in the last 6 to 8 months. That was a loss of major institutional knowledge. Also, just with functionality of their accounting systems, we've had some issues with that. We're hoping to address that with the 15-17 budget recommendations going forward. Included in those recommendations, they're going to be specific packages, but just a quick highlight, the budget and accounting functions will be removed from the department, and Department of Administrative Services, Shared Client Services will be taking those over. There's also a funding for LIDAR programs, the Flooding Hazard Assessment Program, the Earthquake Program, and Landslide Hazards Program, the establishment of a position to serve as a grants coordinator to facilitate the project grant monies that come into this agency. There's also one-time funding for a U.S. Geological Survey LIDAR project expected to take place this summer. Not included in an actual orbits package or within the LFO recommendation, the budget bill creates a separate other funds limitation for the mine land reclamation program in order for the agency to more efficiently track the revenues and expenditures of this program and assist in determining appropriate funding levels going forward. The budget also includes assumed fee increase for this mine land reclamation program that was anticipated to take place in House Bill 3463, although that's been pulled from today's agenda, and there will be a different vehicle for that at a later date. There are also three budget notes, two of which require reporting to legislature in February 2016. With that, I'd like to go through the LFO recommendations for each package within the 15-17 budget.
Please proceed.
The first one in the Geological Survey Program is Package 101, Oregon LIDAR Data Acquisition. This package includes $1.5 million other funds and $2.5 million federal funds expenditure limitation for LIDAR data acquisition projects anticipated in the 15-17 biennium. This should provide enough limitation for the projects that we know of. Sometimes projects develop throughout the biennium, so if there are additional work, the agency can return to the 2016 legislative session or the emergency board for increased limitation. Package 102 is the Flooding Hazard Assessments Program. This package will allow the department to retain four limited duration positions at 4 FTE and make a mapping coordinator position that has been limited duration for the past three biennium a permanent full-time position. This package provides $85,427 of general fund to fund half of the mapping coordinator position and $647,891 of federal fund limitation to fund the four limited duration positions and the remainder of the mapping coordinator position. Package 103 is the Earthquake Program. This package includes $141,711 of general fund to fund a portion of two permanent full-time positions that were formerly supported by federal fund and other fund revenues. This will stabilize the funding for the portion of those two positions, and it will have a corresponding reduction in other funds and federal funds that were associated with this program. Package 104 is the Landslide Hazard Risk Reduction Program. This package includes $287,020 of general fund to fund a portion of three positions that were also formerly supported by other funds and federal funds revenues. It will stabilize the funding for one full-time limited duration position and two permanent full-time positions that will help maintain subject matter expertise that's vital to the agency's core functions. These are positions that are already filled, and this will stabilize the funding for those positions. Package 801 is the LFO analyst adjustments. This package does several things. I touched on a few of them already, but this package eliminates three permanent full-time positions related to the budget and accounting functions of the department, totaling $494,215 of all funds and three FTE. This represents a reduction of $221,018 general fund and $273,197 of other funds. Included in this package, the department has $375,000 split between general fund and other fund to allow the department to contract with Department of Administrative Services, Shared Client Services, to provide the budget and accounting functions for the agency. The package also eliminates a program analyst one position and closes the nature of the Northwest store, which is located on the ninth floor of the Oregon State Office Building in Portland. The total reduction is $219,413 other funds, and this package establishes a permanent full-time operations and policy analyst three position at one FTE that will serve as a grants coordinator to facilitate the complexity of the project grants and monies received from multiple sources. Package 802 is the LIDAR 3DEP project one-time funding. This package provides a one-time appropriation of $770,000 general fund to provide the necessary state match for a LIDAR 3DEP project with the U.S. Geological Survey scheduled to take place this summer. The package includes direction that the department must receive legislative approval of any future federal grant applications that assume the use of general fund to meet grant match requirements. That's the extent of the packages for the Geologic Survey Program. The other program within the agency is the Mine Land Reclamation. Again, in the budget bill, not included in the package here, we're separating out the limitation for these two programs to provide easier tracking. And then there is the one package for the Mine Land Reclamation Program, Package 801. It's a revenue only that assumes a fee increase. The fee increase is anticipated to generate about $570,000 of other funds. As included in a budget note that you'll see later, the department will be reviewing all fee structures and program costs to verify the necessary revenue levels required for operation and sustainability, and will be reporting back to the legislature in February 2016 on any proposed adjustments to the fees. And again, 3463 will not be the vehicle, but we'll have one, we anticipate, the first part of next week.
Representative Clem, you have been probably relieved of my request, so.
I assume that means that, Mr. Chair, I should move to accept the LFO recommendation.
If we have questions, clarification, do we move?
We can move the motion first, and then I'll go to questions and discussion. You've moved the LFO recommendation?
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay, the LFO recommendation has been moved. Senator Hansel.
On the package 103 and 104, the federal funds have been eliminated. Other funds, what happened there? Why?
Chair Devlin, Senator Hansel, the federal funds have not been coming in as anticipated with this agency for some of these programs, and so what this will do is stabilize some of the funding to keep those people on board that have key subject matter expertise.
Well, I understand that, but were the federal funds, why, what was the nature of the revenue source? Is it because we didn't do the work to get it, or is it because they ceased being available, or we're looking at, $250,000 between these two areas, I think. Other funds and federal funds. Do we know why we're not receiving them?
It's not from lack of the department doing any work. It's just the lack of availability of those funds, and not just not being available from the feds anymore.
Okay, so, all right. Then I had another question for me.
Yes, Senator Hanson.
On the two bullet points, on the creates a separate other funds limitation for the mine land reclamation program. And then the next bullet point assumes an increase in fees. Are those two related? Are those fees going into that other funds limitation for that particular portion of the budget? Are they connected there?
Chair Devlin, Senator Hansel, the mine land program is intended to be a self-supporting program based on the fees. The fees have not been sufficient to support that program in the past. So, and then the agency has had difficulty tracking the funds between the two programs. So what this intended to do, the first bullet there, separating out the limitation, will prevent the monies from being used to fund one program or the other program. It'll keep them separate. And then the fee increase is intended to support the budget for the mine land program.
Is the OCAPA, the folks that would be paying that, have they agreed? Are they? Do we know where they are on their fees, supportive or not?
Senator Hansel, my understanding is that the new bill that will be introduced and will be coming to this committee next week will have the fees in it. They will be supportive of the fees. That bill will also probably apply some criteria that will make those fees actually obviously more transparent, more accountable, et cetera, so they feel comfortable with those provisions. And I think Mr. Angstrom is back there nodding his head that with the provisions in that bill, they will feel comfortable.
Then thirdly,
yes.
If I may, are we going to discuss the budget notes later or separately?
Those will be the next motion.
All right, I'll wait till then. Thanks.
Senator Denbrough?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You know, regarding the question of federal funds having to be shifted over to general funds, as I understand it, what we're seeing there is, you know, grants come and go, right? And so you can find yourself in between grants, and the question is, do you lay those people off and lose their expertise, which could make it more difficult for you to get the subsequent grant? Or how do you keep the continuity there? And, you know, I think this is it's a similar kind of situation that we see in our research universities, where university funds are used to sort of smooth over in between grants. My understanding is that's what's going on here. And I will say, Mr. Chair, also that I really regret the closing of the store. And I say that because I only just discovered it this year. This is very close to my district, and I love that store. And it has great resources, but it is kind of tucked away. If you're not on the ninth floor of that building, you're not going to know about it. So I wish some of those assets can be put out into the field somehow and still become a revenue source.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Were any of the loss of the federal funding and the grants caused because of the lack of or the poor reporting that I know was occurring? Is that an issue?
Chair Devlin, Representative Hack, I don't believe that was the issue, but there are people in the audience that might be able to answer that question specifically, but I know that they had some difficulty getting their reports, but we've had a team from DAS go in there and try and help them out, and I believe that that's getting back on track, so they are going to be able to draw down the funds that they previously hadn't been able to. So I don't think we lost any funds that aren't now being retrieved, if that makes sense.
So the funds, the federal funds that you're referring to and what Senator Hansel had asked, those weren't lost given the fact that we had poor reporting or any of those just aren't available anymore, and there aren't additional federal funds that we've lost or aren't available because of, you know, and I'm searching for some dollars that they may be able to get back or, you know, once they get this reporting piece figured out, because I'm encouraged with the fact that DAS is stepping in and helping them. So I'm just wondering if Yeah, there's some issues.
Chair
there,
Devlin, Representative Hack, they are figuring out the reporting. These federal fund dollars included in these packages that's going away is not as a result of the agency not doing something correctly. It's just the federal funds are no longer available, not from poor reporting by the agency. Just I believe that as far as the pulling federal funds from 13-15, that DAS has gone in and trying to get that cleared up. I think they're still, I believe the number is about $275,000 federal funds that they're still looking to draw down. So they're still going to be able to access that money going forward.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions? Yes, Representative Clinton.
So back on this fee question, don't we have their fee bill here in front of us, 3463?
Yeah, we're going to actually utilize a different vehicle than that fee bill, because some of the things that we want to put into that other bill that will provide some greater accountability and transparency for those fees won't fit within this relating clause.
Okay, so two questions. One, then, can I tell my friend, Mr. Representative Evans, that we're going to move as an underlying bill then?
Representative Evans has been consultant and has graciously consented to us utilizing his bill.
But we're not going to utilize it.
Well, no. His bill was the original bill, right? The 3463. We're not going to utilize it, no.
But maybe we could just use the underlying bill.
Maybe sometime in the future. Okay, yes, maybe.
I want to keep his dreams alive a little longer. He's a freshman, for God.
Yeah, no. No, but he's. Well, what Representative Clem is commenting on is we acquired a bill to do what we were basically originally trying to do here that had a totally different purpose, but had a really broad relating clause. And so we won't be amending that bill, and he's trying to make a pitch for Representative Evans that perhaps the underlying original bill should be moved.
And so, with some pork in my district. So just keep my people alive a little longer if I could.
Any additional discussion of the motion before us? Yes, Representative Hack.
I had previously agreed to be a courtesy yes before Representative Rayfield came back. And I have great concern with Dagami, but yet I understand the importance of the work that they do and am extremely supportive of that work. But obviously there's a lot of issues within this budget. But again, I am supportive, and I really appreciate the work that the folks that have stepped in. And he really walked into a mess, and I certainly hope that the interim director stays and stays the course and cleans this mess up. And I appreciate the work that DAS is going to do stepping in. So I'm going to continue to be that yes, but I may change my mind between now and the time it hits the floor. So I just want to reserve that, the right to do that. But I'm going to stick with my courtesy today just because I really believe in the work that these folks are going to do. But I do have some serious concern, and I really hope they take this opportunity to clean this mess up.
Any objections to the motion before the committee? Please note Representative Parrish. Motion carries. We will go on to the, we're going to go on to the performance measures first. And then we'll go to the notes.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, you'll find the legislatively proposed 2015-17 key performance measures within that packet. The LFO recommendation is to approve those measures and targets as proposed.
Okay. Representative Rayfield?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures.
Okay. It's been moved to approve the LFO recommendation on key performance measures. Any discussion of the motion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. We'll move on to the budget notes.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, there are three budget notes. The first two require reporting back to the legislature in 2016, so I'll read those into the record. The approved budget is designed to maintain current operations and provide a level of financial and management assistance to deliver stability to the department. The department is instructed to report in February 2016 legislative session to the Natural Resources Subcommittee on its progress in implementing appropriate measures to improve the agency's business practices. In its report, the department must outline what specific measures have been taken to address the following. Number one, reorganization of accounting and budget structures, including creating an accounting and budget structure to separate LIDAR from other organization operations. Two, address the agency's antiquated accounting systems and procedures and implementation of modern practices. Three, review the agency's current business and organizational infrastructure. Four, review the agency's core operations, program priorities, and funding sources. Five, review of the agency's cash flow and application of indirect rates that fund some administrative functions. Six, review current fee structures and the level of fee revenue necessary to cover program costs within the Mineral Land Regulation and Reclamation Program. The Department of Administrative Services, in conjunction with other state agencies, will provide business operating services and management support through February 2016 and will assist in reporting to the legislature during the 2016 session. The second budget note is IT review. The department is directed to work with the Office of the State Chief Information Officer to conduct a comprehensive assessment of the agency's information technology-related operations. The assessment is to include, but not be limited to, an evaluation of the following. One, IT organizational structure, policies and practices, management and staffing, funding and expenditures, and governance. Two, inventory of current systems, hardware, software, data resources, and applications. Three, business drivers and organizational mandates for information technology and data management. Four, current operational and technical deficiencies and gaps. Five, current and any potential alternative methods for data exchange and providing online access to data resources. Six, operation and technical requirements for systems, data, and applications. Seven, requirements necessary for any recommended changes or enhancements to IT management, staffing, funding, policies, and practices. A report on this comprehensive assessment is to be submitted to the Legislative Fiscal Office in December 2015 and jointly presented by DOGAMI and the Office of the State Chief Information Officer to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology and to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means during the 2016 legislative session. The third and final budget note, the department is directed to provide online to the public any mineral inventory studies previously completed by the department that address the mineral potential of southern and eastern Oregon counties.
Is there a motion to move the LFO recommendation on budget notes?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation on budget notes.
Okay. Discussion, another Senator Hansel.
My discussion revolves around budget note number three. My concern was, in fact, for all the budgets and notes in particular, but number three is that we have a department that's really struggling, and to put additional requirements on them when they're trying to get their head above water, I was wondering about the wisdom of that. But I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the increased fees and the other funds limitation would help fund, particularly budget note number three, of getting all these studies online, which would, in fact, I think, help the industry who is increasing their fees. So I just want to make sure there's that nexus there, if anybody can help me with that.
Okay. Senator Hansel, my understanding is that the industry support for the enhanced fees is with some considerable expectation that the work in budget note three will be accomplished, and that's one of the reasons they're supportive. Mr. Angstrom, would you like to come forward? I mean, I'm in work session, but if you want to confirm that.
Thank you. Rich Angstrom, President of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association. We have two things going forward at the same time, 3089, which has the same kind of middle inventory kind of idea within it, and then this obvious budget note. And we're supportive of part of the fees because they're going to be around $100,000 extra dollars from our perspective for basically getting the reserve built back up that can be used for some of these projects that we think are important. I know that talking with the director on that, it's going to have a minimal fiscal associated with it, so that work. And so we're supportive of that concept.
Any additional? Is there a motion on the budget notes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation on budget notes.
Okay. Discussion? Any objections to the budget notes? Seeing none, motion carries. Let's move on to the amendment.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, the Dash 1 amendment includes the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendations for the budget. It's $4,133,992 the general fund, $6,106,862 other funds, $5,360,944 of federal funds. Also included in that Dash 1 amendment is the $800,000 for the 1315 biennium, as well as you can see an adjustment putting the mine land program as a separate other funds limitation from the geologic survey program.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 5512.
Okay. Representative Rayfield has moved the Dash 1 amendment to SB 5512. Discussion? Objections to the motion? Seeing no objection, motion carries. We'll move to the final motion.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 5512 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Okay. It's been moved to move 5512 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections to the motion? Please note, Representative Parrish. Motion carries. Before we adjourn, I would ask that LFO, in preparation of the documents that the carrier to the full will have and the members that are carrying on both floors, that they be very explicit in terms of the actions that have been taken and why they were taken to restore the agency to some degree of fiscal health and greater fiscal accountability, just so that that's very clear to the people in the full members of the full committee and the members of the legislature in both chambers. So they just want that to be very explicit, actually, in those documents.
So who's carrying it?
Oh. Well, I'm going to ask if Representative Rayfield would carry it to the full, because he's aware of all of the issues.
I'd be glad to.
And will you carry it to the floor also?
Oh, I thought Representative Hack wanted to do that. Yeah, I mean, okay. The floor.
Looking at my two volunteers.
Maybe you should do this one. I'm happy to, but. They say you retired Richard.
Richard.
Are you okay with it? Or do you want somebody else? Yeah.
I mean, well, I usually don't carry much to the floor.
Hello?
Do I have a volunteer? Okay. Senator Denbrough will carry to the Senate floor. With that, thank you all very much for being here today, and we are adjourned. Huh?
Yeah.
On the floor, though.
Okay. Well, I may
have. Is that industry really likes the work that Tadami does?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember last year when industry really likes the work that Tadami does.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember.